Welcome to the Grace Point Publishing Podcast. Join us on a journey with our authors as they explain the meanings behind their message, discuss what inspires them to write, and share the many parts of their book publishing journey. And now, here's your host, co-founder and publisher of Grace Point Publishing, Michelle Vandepass.
Toby, I am so thrilled that you have joined me here today, and we're going to just jump right in, if that's okay.
That sounds awesome for me.
So I've been telling people a little bit about your story, and this is what they always come back and say, oh, it's that dog lady, right?
Yes, I get that.
It bugs me a little bit, so I just want to know, how do you feel about being called the dog lady?
You know, I think that's part of who I am. So it doesn't bother me a bit because I've been a dog lady since I was 8 years old. I think it's kind of fun. One time, my husband and I went to a garage sale, and this was about maybe 4 or 5 years after we got out of prison. And she had a dog. And my husband, Chris, he was admiring the dog. And she said, oh, you know, the strangest thing is I got this dog from a prison dog program. And the lady who did it, this terrible thing happened. She helped this guy escape from prison, and she went to prison, and I've been so worried about her, and I wish I knew how she was doing. And Chris just looked at me, and he started laughing, and she looked at me, and she said, you're her. You're the dog lady, aren't you? And I said, yes, I am.
Wow.
She said, you adopted this dog to me. So I thought that was pretty fun. But things like that happen all the time.
That's super cool. So your book, Living with Conviction, is up for pre-order now. It's going to be out by the time this airs. I'm super excited about it. When I read it, I was really taken aback by how much you honored the journey you went on and did not play victim to any of it.
Yeah, that's the topic that's really important to me.
I think a lot of people, and for those who don't really know Toby's story, buy the book. Paperback, ebook, hardback, audiobook, all of them, right? But what happened was you went into the prisons with the dogs and fell in love with an inmate and helped him escape. And then you went to prison. It's basically the story, but that's not really the story.
That's right.
The story is, why would you do that? You were a married woman with kids. You had a life. You do not play the card where some people have tried to put you in a box, like you were groomed or this prison guy took advantage of you. And maybe looking back, some of those things are true, but that is not in your book.
No, it's not. And here's the reason why. I realized when I was in prison, I did so much reflection and introspection, but I realized that I could be a victim, and that would be the easy way out. Because if I was a victim, I didn't have to take responsibility for any part that I played in this whole escape, the decision to do it, anything. But then I would be stuck for the rest of my life as a victim, and I would never be able to stand up on my own and be strong in what I went through. So I decided pretty early on that I would choose to be a victor instead of a victim. And I owned that I was involved in the planning, and I could have said no at any time, and I didn't. And I went through with this, and I was guilty. And actually, that whole experience, while I would never repeat it, of course, it was an unbelievable learning experience for me. The whole time of going through prison and then getting out of prison and having to rebuild my life at the age of 51 with no job, no money, nothing. And boy, if that doesn't either make you sink or swim.
And I think everybody at some point goes through a dark night of the soul or makes mistakes. I love something that you say, love it. It's kind of your tagline that we are not our worst mistake.
That's right. Wouldn't it be a terrible world if that's all that any of us could ever be, was the worst thing we ever did? I lived half a century before these 12 days happened. And to think that none of that and none of the 16 years I've lived since would have no effect on the person I am is just ridiculous, really.
And really, that's a big piece of the story. That I would like to talk for a minute about now. And you talk about this in your book. Sort of mindset were you in at the point leading up to the prison break? Like, it was almost like you didn't care, like there was nothing to live for.
That's exactly right. I had kind of reached this point of desperation where so many things were happening in my life at once. I had just had a cancer diagnosis and I was recovering myself. So I was dealing with the thought that our lives are not endless and that if I was going to have a purpose here in the world, I was running out of time and I better get on that. And at the same time, my dad was dying of cancer and my sons had left home. They were both in college. And I had this huge, I hate to say midlife crisis because it's so cliche, but here I was at this point in my life where everything was changing and a lot of things were falling apart. And I just felt lost and desperate that I knew something in my life needed to change and I didn't know what it was. And then all of a sudden, I met this man who happened to be an inmate who noticed that I was struggling with something and asked me how I was doing. And that was all it took, was someone to be perceptive enough to see that I was struggling with something. And the attention from him was just like pouring water on a dying plant. I was ready to just throw it all away to have this moment of significance.
I think if you take away the vehicle of you escaping the prison that you were in, that metaphor, if you take away the vehicle of you went and broke someone out of prison, I think a lot of people on the planet right now would like to do something really drastic to change up their lives.
I think so, too. We're in such a period of conflict and angst and people pitting against their neighbors. And it's just so much turmoil. And it's at those moments that desperate things seem like good ideas.
And you coach women now and you help women through your workbooks and your prison programs and through this book. You help specifically women, but it's not just women, figure out other ways to break free without doing something desperate or so damaging. Like, there are other ways.
And the first thing you really need to do is to be honest with yourself and really spend that time with introspection and reflection and admit to yourself that your life is not what you wanted it to be. And think of some ways to make a positive change instead of letting yourself get to such a point of desperation that you'll just grab at whatever comes along.
We were talking about this right before we went on. I think it takes a lot of courage to look at yourself honestly and say, my life isn't where I want it to be. What can I do to change?
Yes, it does take a tremendous amount of courage because, at least for myself, I believed I had the perfect life. I had this little white picket fence and I painted it and polished it. The whole world thought my life was perfect. And I believed my life was perfect until one day I realized it wasn't. And then I could never polish that fence enough to make it be something I wanted to stay inside of anymore.
So what advice would you give someone right now who feels like, yeah, I just want to crash and burn and start all over again? Because there's other ways besides crashing and burning. That's what you're saying.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of other ways. The first thing that I think you need to do is to talk about it. And if you don't have someone that you can talk to about it, then get a journal and a pen and talk to yourself about it. Because I discovered who I was through the 27 journals I filled up while I was in prison. That's where I discovered who I was. And there's something about writing it with a pen on a piece of paper as opposed to trying to type it into a computer. They're not the same thing. You need to pick up a pen and you need to do the hard work of writing.
As a writing coach, I talk about how the arm is an extension that comes out of your heart. So what's in your heart is flowing through your arm and through your fingers and through the pen onto the paper. And so think of it that way.
One thing that I did that kind of got me started, I am a prolific reader. I love to read. And when I read a book and there's a phrase in there that I love, that it really strikes home to me for some reason, I write it in my journal and I leave a space so that I can come back and then explore, why does that phrase mean so much to me? Why is it calling to me? And then as you start to write what that phrase feels like to you, then I think some of the secrets come out.
Beautiful, beautiful. One of the things that struck me about the book is how freaking complicated the prison system is.
Oh, yes.
Pulling back the curtain, deep secrets here. I just finished watching Ozark.
I love Ozark. Yes.
The guy, the cartel guy, suddenly was told he's being transferred. So they come get him. The guard comes and gets the cartel guy and pulls him out of his cell. And I'm shouting to my husband, Toby writes about this in her book. She talks about how they just come get you.
Yes.
And you have to leave everything and you can't even get your toothpaste.
And you don't know where you're going.
And you don't know where you're going and your family doesn't know where you're going. And I'm shouting to my husband.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it made me think of, is I have this insight now that I didn't have before. They just come get you and move you.
They do. And you don't know why. And you don't know where you're going. And you can't take anything with you. And it is so surprising. And I think actually when you were reading my book, you said to me, wait a minute, how can they take you somewhere and you don't know where you're going? And I just laughed out loud because like, that's the whole story of prison. Nobody tells you anything. They just move you around like you're a piece on a chessboard.
And let's be real. You're in prison. You were there for how many months?
27 months.
27 months, right. You make friends.
Yes.
They become your community, because that's who you have. And you just leave them. They wake up in the morning, suddenly you're gone.
And you're gone. That's right.
And you're gone. And they're like, what happened to Toby?
Mm-hmm. It is so heartbreaking. And we tried. There's still some women I stay in touch with that I was in prison with. And they mean the world to me, because nobody else ever lived through the vulnerability that we lived through together. And it just creates this deep well of sisterhood. And when you leave, you can't, if they move you to another prison, a prisoner can't write to someone in prison in another prison. So you're just severed from them until you're both out of prison.
I missed that. I didn't know that.
Yeah. An inmate cannot write a letter to an inmate in another facility, or an inmate in their own facility either. So when they move you, you're just severed until you're both released from prison and you can reconnect.
Okay, I don't want to go down that rabbit hole because it just makes me so angry. I mean, what if you have family or...
Yeah, it's just heartbreaking.
It does not, to me, feel like it's a way of either really punishment or rehabilitation. It's just sort of...
I never saw rehabilitation when I was in prison. It was punishment. It was just warehousing. I felt like, you know, at this one prison, which was a private for-profit prison where I spent 15 months, I felt like a book on a shelf. And that's all I had was that bed. We couldn't even eat at a table because we were too crowded. There weren't any tables. So you had to sit on your bunk to read, sleep on your bunk, eat on your bunk. That little bunk, that bed was all you had. And you spent all of your time there. There wasn't anywhere else to go.
One of the things you and I have talked about a little bit is how trauma from your childhood maybe contributed to decisions you made later.
Yes.
And as I look around the world right now, I see a lot of traumatized children.
Mm-hmm. I do too. And most of them are 40 or 50 years old and they're still broken little 5-year-olds or 6-year-olds or, you know, whatever age that their trauma occurred.
And I also want to talk about all the kids who lived through COVID and didn't get any socialization, all the kids who are grieving, who didn't get prom or graduation,
yes,
all the kids in Ukraine and Syria and in Africa who are refugees moving from place to place. Never mind the 40 and 50-year-olds who went through trauma. What does this mean to our planet?
It means disaster when those broken little kids become adults, because they can't function healthily as adults until they resolve that brokenness from their childhood. And it's difficult to do because most people think, well, you got through it, you know, you're fine, but you're not. There's so many different things that trigger you as an adult from that trauma in your childhood. And I really think one of the biggest factors was that when I was 5, my dad was burned seriously in an accident in our backyard. And he was in the hospital for months, for 6 months, 8 months. It was a long time. I saw him burned. I believed he was never coming back. I thought he was dead. And no one could convince me that he wasn't, because where was he? If he was alive, where was he? And when my dad got cancer and I was an adult and I was at this crossroads in my life where my children had left home and I had just recovered from cancer myself, and now my dad's diagnosed with stage 4 cancer and he's dying in just a matter of months. And that little girl in me who lived through her dad dying, she thought, when she was 5, couldn't deal with watching him die another time, and she ran away. And I think that was a huge contributing factor.
And what a great insight now.
Mm-hmm.
But how, you know, the question is, how do you get those insights earlier in your life?
Yes, exactly.
And that's hard.
That's really the hard part, because it isn't until you completely break apart, which sometimes is too late, that you realize this came from somewhere else and I need to figure out where it came from so I can heal that.
There are more resources now than ever, I think.
Mm-hmm, that's true.
There's therapy.
Yes.
People understand triggers and therapy and emotional intelligence. And those are words that are out there in the community now that weren't a decade ago, right?
Yes, that's right. People are more accepting of hearing that there's issues that need to be resolved. One of the biggest blessings in my life is that I met my husband, Chris, and we got married, and Chris pulled those things out of me. He knew I had stuff to deal with, and he just encouraged me to keep talking about it until we pulled it all out. My whole life, I had kept it hidden because that's the environment I lived in. We wanted to keep all of our problems secret and hidden. And you can't function that way.
I've got a teenager at home. I got a couple of teenagers at home now. And there's no real secrets between the two of them. They talk about it all. It's a little weird for me, but I think it's healthier.
It is much healthier. It's so much healthier. Yeah.
Moving on, you went to prison. You did your time. You came out basically with nothing. No family.
That's right.
No money, no family, no job.
No car.
Did they just dump you on the street?
They put me on a Greyhound bus. I was in Houston, Texas when I was released. They put me on a Greyhound bus at a 15-hour bus ride home. And it was like, find a job. You got to find a job. And nobody wanted to hire felons. It's just a recipe for disaster.
Luckily, you had a mom to go home to.
Oh, my mom was awesome. Yes.
But your family generally wasn't so supportive, but your mom hung in there with you.
My mom did. Yes.
So fast forward now, you're helping other people not make devastating mistakes, but make changes in their lives that help them break free of whatever prison they feel they're in.
That's right. Because I think all of us have a prison that we've created ourselves. And it could be perfectionism. It could be an image you want to portray to the world, but there's something that you've created that holds you back. And you need to break through that and let go of whatever that thing is that you think you have to be the best, the smartest, the strongest, whatever it is, and let that go so that you can just be who you're meant to be.
You've got a series of beautiful workbooks. You have a program where you help women, mostly in prison, but I imagine.
Well, the funny thing is, when I designed that program, I pictured it for women in prison, but 95% of the women who've used the workbooks aren't in prison. And they tell me, oh my gosh, this is just what I needed. So I think it isn't limited to who can use it. I think we can all learn how to be stronger women.
Now, you've got grandkids.
Yes, I do. I do have grandkids.
What do you tell them?
We actually live in a separate living space in their house. So were there with them every day. And I take them to and from school. So I had these moments where I had these conversations with them. And my granddaughter's in second grade, and she's struggling right now with some girls calling her silly names, and she wants to stand by a girl and another one pushes her out of the way. Already in second grade, she's struggling with these self-image issues. And I just try to be there so she can tell me what's going on in her day, and I can love her through it and just tell her she's fine the way she is. And so I think that's really what kids need, is to not be judged and not be pressured by the adults in their lives to become the top student in the class or whatever their parents envision for them, and just let them know it's okay to be exactly who they are.
So are you worried about any lashback when your book comes out?
I expect lashbacks when my book comes out, but I'm not really worried about them because I just know it's going to happen. So there's nothing to worry about. It's going to happen. It's just going to be, do I let it bother me or not?
Well, you're courageous. You've had more trauma and heartbreak, not just around this prison episode in your life, but a lot of heartbreak elsewhere in your life, that when people read the book, they'll get a glimpse of some of that. You're a very courageous woman, Toby, and I appreciate you being on the show today.
Thank you so much. I tell my story because I never know who's going to hear it when I tell it this time, and it might be the one person who really needs to hear it.
The book is Living with Conviction. Up everywhere books are sold. You can get audio, paperback, hardback, or ebook, and the workbooks. Go to tobydoor.com if you'd like to find out more about Toby. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thanks, Michelle.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of the Grace Point Publishing Authors Podcast. We can't wait to talk more next time as we introduce you to another one of our amazing authors. Make sure you hit subscribe on your favorite podcasting platform so you never miss a single episode of the Grace Point Publishing Authors Podcast. To find out more about our authors and to see how we can help you publish your book, head to gracepointpublishing.com. Keep writing. Keep creating. Your words matter.